Yes, we have been able to overcome this crisis. Let us now see how we have been able to sustain ourselves and what steps have been created by looking at the sector-wise economy of our country. First, we look at agriculture. It is the country's largest employment source and a significant piece of socio-economic development. Mind you, when we got independence at that time, 90% of the population were in agriculture production. 90% were relying on agriculture production. There were very few jobs outside agriculture. But the five-year plans which were created by the government, every 5 years planning, it led to steadily improvements in irrigation, technology, application of modern agricultural practices. This helped our agriculture to a very great extent. And also provisions of giving agricultural credit and subsidies by the government. Since the Green Revolution which has come about, all these have given a great boost to the agricultural sector of our economy. Our crop yield per unit area of all crops has grown due to this special emphasis placed on agriculture in India. These factors led to further boosting the Green Revolution, creating a situation where we were being importers of all our food requirements to a net exporter of all agricultural products. I remember during Ukraine war when it started, we virtually became world wheat suppliers. Look at the situation. At the time of independence, we were world importers of wheat, low-grade wheat. And now we are exporting high-value, high-yield wheat, good quality wheat, to such an extent that the world wanted our wheat. India is the largest producer of jutes and pulses. We are the largest producers. We are also the second largest producer of rice, wheat, sugarcane, cotton, groundnuts, fruit, and vegetable. This is the extent of the progress that we have made on account of the Green Revolution. Even fishing, we are the world's sixth largest fishing industry. We have a milk revolution also. Amul created a revolution in milk. Dr. Kurien, if I remember correctly, he was the architect of the milk revolution in India. And today, India is the largest producer of milk and has the world's second largest cattle population with 17 crore animals as of 2011. I don't know, the subsequent census has still not come out. It is also the second largest producer and largest consumer of silk. Our silk is being exported throughout the world. When we go for international comparisons reveal the average yield in India is generally 30% to 50% of the highest average yield in the world. That means we are still lacking in the quantum of the yield per unit. Our yield per unit is 30 to 50%, whereas world, looking at world, 100%. So we still have got scope to increase our yield potential as far as agriculture is concerned. Next, we look at aviation. Civil aviation in India had its beginning in 18th February 1911, when Henri Picquet, a French aviator, carried 6,500 pieces of mail on a Humber biplane from Allahabad to Naini. It's a very short distance, but mail was carried as an experiment. But more than that, a jump was given by J.R.D. Tata, our own Tata. 15th October 1932, Mr. J.R.D. Tata flew a consignment of mail from Karachi, which is now in Pakistan, to Bombay, Juhu Airport. Our international airport is now at a different place. But here in original, we had a small airport in Juhu at that time. So J.R.D. Tata flew mail from Karachi on his own aircraft and brought it to Juhu Airport. And his airline later became Air India. And it was the first Asian airline to cross the Atlantic Ocean, as well as the first Asian airline to fly jets in Asia. We were the first ones. In March 1953, the government nationalized all the private airlines, including the Tata Group Air India. That was all nationalized and taken away by the government. But today, last year, it has again reversed the whole thing. Tatas have got back their Air India. Government has sold it to Air India. That's the beauty of the old situation. India is estimated to have, as of now, 800 aircrafts. This is somewhere in 2020. And of course, because of that pandemic, we have not been able to update the figures. And we are termed as the fourth largest civil aviation market in the world. Tata Group has now acquired back Air India in 2022 from the government. Of course, let us see how long it takes them to bring Air India back to its original format of Tata's. We now look at banking and the financial services. The Indian money market is classified into two sectors. One, organized sector, and two, unorganized sector. Difference between the two? Organized sector comprising private, public, and foreign-owned commercial banks and cooperative banks, together known as scheduled banks. Unorganized sector includes individual or family-owned indigenous bankers or money lenders. Mind you, Marwadis were one of the biggest money lenders, and all other non-banking financial companies, they are all in the unorganized sector. Government nationalized 14 banks in 1969, followed by six others in 1980, and made it mandatory for banks to provide 40% of their credit to the priority sector, which was agriculture. Since liberalization, the government has approved significant banking reforms. Tremendous banking reforms have come about after that period, which have opened the banking system and insurance system to private and foreign companies. And that is where you see so many foreign banks have come into India. Slowly, foreign insurance companies are also interested in coming to India. The next sector that we will discuss is the electricity and energy sector. India became the world's third largest producer of electricity, and we have a surplus with many power stations idling for want of demand. Look at the situation. You need more energy because most of you have got your own mobile phone. In spite of the fact that you are continuously using energy, electrical energy to charge your mobile phone, in spite of that, we have got extra capacity of electricity. And the latest news which is coming out is we are ready to give electricity from our ideal capacity to a country like Sri Lanka. A discussion is going on to set up a power grid over the sea. Just like we have Ram Setu, we want to build up the electrical lines to supply electrical energy to Sri Lanka. India is meeting most of its domestic demand through its coal reserves. We are using coal for electrical generation. But we also have a rich in certain alternative sources of energy with significant future potential, such as solar, wind, and biofuels. Are you aware? I don't know. We are all living in cities. But do you know, if you go to the countryside, village side, there people are using biofuel. Fuel being used out of cow dung over there. They don't need LPG and all these petrol or diesel or any such wood, etc. for burning. Cow dung is being used by them. Even today, small villages are using it. That is the biofuel. But we have gone worldwide now. We are having windmills. We are having solar panels in multiple places. Therefore, we have become rich in alternative sources of energy. We are not relying only on coal. We have uranium reserves, and our uranium reserves are expected to fuel the country's ambitious nuclear energy program in the long run. Till now, we were importing uranium, but we have got now a uranium large reserve. Our oil reserves meet 25% of country's domestic demand. Bombay High, Assam's Digboi, we are generating our own crude oil from such places, and now many other oil basins have been developed privately also. Net result is 25%, which I understand recently it is moving up to 40%. And we will now be able to rely only up to the extent of 60% importing of oil. So that's less of burden on foreign exchange. We go to engineering. Engineering is the largest subsector of India's industrial sector and third largest for exports. Mind you, when you want to go for exports, touch engineering definitely. This includes transport equipment, machine tools, capital goods, transformers, switchgears, furnaces, and cast and forged parts for turbines, automobiles, railways. Malaysian Metro Rail, do you know, we have built it up. Our Indian company, Larsen and Toubro, they have built the Malaysian Metro Rail. That's the stage where we have come across now. Engineering industry of India includes its growing car, motorcycle, scooters industry, and productive machinery such as tractors. India is the largest producer and largest market as far as tractors are concerned. You go to any village in India today, you'll find the farmers using tractors for their agriculture production. India is also the 12th largest producer and 7th largest consumer of machine tools. Any tools that you are using to work, whether you call it carpenter or electrical tools, these are all machine tools. And this is the strength which shows our service sector increasing. When we look at financial and FDI, foreign direct investment, I think we have really worked wonders over here. The fintech landscape is 34% of payment processing, 32% in banking, 12% in trading, public and private market, and it is expected to grow 1.7 times. Up to 2020, it has grown. We are now being given a boost under the Make in India scheme. And we are showing our strength in telecommunication and information technology. Our industrial policy reforms have totally reduced licensing restrictions on expansions, and it has facilitated easy access to technology and investment. Foreigners are now bringing their investment in our industry today, especially in the field of information and technology. This has also boosted our auto components, chemicals, apparels, jewelry, and pharmaceuticals goods. Government has eased 87 foreign direct investments rules across 21 sectors of the economy, and companies have started operations in US, Europe, and Africa. Yes, I said our companies, Indian companies, have started operating in US, Europe, and Africa. And the most surprising factor is the Indian company Tata's is UK, United Kingdom's largest manufacturer and private sector employee. Look at it. Tata is not only famous in India, but it is the largest employer in UK. That is where we have seen a quantum jump with this freedom in the financial and FDI sector. Look at gems and jewelry. That's our plus point. This market has been economically active in India for several thousand years. It's not only recent past, but several thousand years we have been a leader in this industry. By one of the largest centers for polishing diamonds and gems and manufacturing of jewelry. Export and import of gold, precious metals, precious stone, gems, jewelry accounts for a very large part of our global trade. There was a time when gems and jewelry import and export was termed to be the largest part of economic movement. Imports and exports of this item were at topmost level. And our particular strength as far as this subsector is concerned is in precision cutting, polishing, and processing of small diamonds. we have got a hub for processing of larger diamonds also, pearls, precious stones also. If we look at statistics, statically 11 out of 12 diamonds set in any jewelry in the world are cut and polished in India. They are not mined in India. They are imported. We are importers, one of the largest importers of diamonds, rough diamonds. But they are cut and polished and then re-exported out. 11 out of 12 diamonds you see throughout the world have been cut and polished in India. Our next biggest jump was in the information technology. The information technology industry in India consists of two major components. One, IT services and BPO, business processing outsourcing. The growth in this IT sector is due to increased specialization and an availability of large pool of low-cost, highly skilled, fluent English-speaking workers. I think even amongst all your friends, if you will see, most of you are related to this information technology sector. There is also an increased demand from foreign consumers who are interested in our service exports and to outsource their business opportunities in India. That is where we have become BPO, business process outsourcing, have jumped like anything. The business process outsourcing industry in this in India caters mainly to Western operations of multinational corporations. They are the main people who have outsourced all their IT operations to us in India because they are finding us highly competitive in terms of costing as also skilling. When we look at the infrastructure part of the economy, India has the second largest road network in the world, only behind the United States. Look at the significant factor over here. We are crying over our roads, potholed roads, etc. But we have the largest network of the road as far as the world is concerned. India's roads are again a mix of modern highways and narrow unpaved roads and are being improved step by step. Again, another factor is the railway. Railway network is the fourth largest rail network in the world. I wouldn't say not only in India, but we have developed the railways of Malaysia, we have developed the railways of many other countries. Go to Mauritius, go to Nepal, even Bangladesh, we have developed the railways. This is government-owned. The railways are totally government-owned and operated. And this network carries on an average of 2.3 crore passengers in one day. Look at the number of passengers in your local train in Mumbai. Just look at that and you will get a better idea of the carriage by the Indian Railway. Again, India has a coastline of 7,500 kilometers with 13 major and 60 non-major ports. That means 13 large international ports and 60 smaller ports. Nhava Sheva in Mumbai is the largest public port and Mundra in Gujarat is the largest private seaport in India. Airport infrastructure in India, it includes 125 airports, of which 66 airports are licensed to handle passengers and cargo both. This is where we have moved. Let us look at insurance also. The Indian insurance market is small as compared to the world major economies. Just 2%. We have only 2% of world's insurance business. On all other factors, we are moving jumps ahead, but in insurance sector, we are backward. Life insurance accounts for 75.41% of the insurance market, and the rest is general insurance for other commodity insurance, including marine cargo insurance. Specialist insurers we have got in the form of Export Credit Guarantee Corporation, and they offer credit guarantee for importers and exporters. Importers and exporters rely on ECGC for providing insurance to their exchange risks, currency risks. Agriculture Insurance Company offers crop insurance to the farmers. And it has introduced several innovative products such as weather insurance and insurance related to specific crops, so that today the farmers are relying on insurance protection as far as their agricultural products are concerned, because it is having a very difficult time because of the vagaries of the nature, like monsoon not coming timely, etc., etc. Telecommunication. India is the second largest market in the world by number of telephone users. Second largest market in the world. Why? Because it has got one of the lowest call tariffs in the world due to fierce competition among the operators. Of course, we find it to be high, rates are very high, we want lower rate. But as far as world tariffs are concerned for using the telephones and mobile phones, we have got the lowest call tariffs. And we have got the third largest internet user base. Very high user base as far as internet is concerned. And largest DTH, direct to home transmission for not only for TV but also for your computers. Largest number of subscribers for DTH, because DTHs are all privately controlled, licensed by the government. When we look at tourism, the World Travel and Tourism Council has calculated that tourism sector is predicted to grow at an annual rate of 6.9% as far as India is concerned. International tourism to India has seen a steady growth, of course with a small break during this period of pandemic. And here, US is the largest source of international tourists coming to India, while European Union and Japan are other major sources of international tourists coming to India. And mostly tourists come to visit the Taj Mahal. But now you find day-to-day basis, majority of them visiting other cultural sectors like Rajasthan, thematic holiday circles. We have got holy places as tourist centers. And above all, India has got the fastest growing medical tourism sector, offering low-cost health services and long-term care. During this pandemic, we became the world tourist center known as medical tourism on account of the number of vaccines that we created, and we could inject the vaccine. People were coming from the world over for our medical tourism sector. Thank you.